The AC Podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada and is supported by the generous donations of our listeners. If you would like to partner with us in this ministry, please go to apologeticscanada.com.
Welcome to the AC Podcast, everybody. This is Steve Kim.
Andy Steiger.
Terry Crosby.
Terry, what do you have for us today?
This one hurt my eyes.
You can't unsee.
I can't
what
unsee.
You've seen.
So there was this Kickstarter that just started, Kickstarter campaign. They're trying to raise $10,000. A group of guys from a college trying to promote a new idea.
Dare I know what this new idea is? This is a bunch of college students.
Yeah. I can't tell if this is for real or they're just joking. But they won $10,000. They got $84,000 or $87,000 now, as of now, for the campaign. So you've heard of girl rompers?
I kind of see where this is going.
Yeah. Yeah. You can, right? They're going to call it Romp Him. Like, they're creating a romper for a guy.
Boy rompers.
Boy rompers.
A boy moo-moo.
Moo-moo.
This isn't a bad idea, Terry. I'm actually kind of liking this.
Okay. This is good. We might be able to get Andy into one of these.
How do I fund this thing?
There is a market for it.
Oh, dude, that's a one. Okay, so Terry's showing me currently, and that's clearly a onesie.
Look how comfortable he looks.
Oh my goodness.
Right?
That's not a moo-moo, dude. That's a onesie.
A onesie? Look at that.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I'm not sure about this.
All right, we'll post that on the show notes. You need to take a peek at that.
You need to take a peek and maybe later on.
If I bought you one of those, would you wear it?
No. I don't want one. It sounds like you're more interested in this.
I would wear it.
Okay, we might be able to get a picture of Andy at a moo-moo.
Well, what's that thing called? That's a
Romp Him.
Yeah, I don't like that name. I'm not going to wear it just because of that name. That's not right.
Oh, man, that's just, I don't know.
Well, thanks
for
that,
you
Terry.
Got anybody out there can check it out if they want to go buy one. These guys are going to be on the market.
By the way, while you were scouring the web for these really important news articles.
There might be somebody that wants that.
I heard that you came across a thing about dinosaurs, and that currently on display in Alberta is dinosaur skin.
It is amazing what they found. It was about 2012, 5 years, five, 6 years ago.
But they're just now putting it out?
Yeah. They're displaying it in Drumheller right now. They found this dinosaur just north of Fort McMurray.
That's called the middle of nowhere. in Canadian terms.
It's really not. Yeah. I mean, you really have to see the picture of it. So maybe I'll send Steve the article. Amazing. Like half the body of a real dinosaur, but showing its body armor. You can see the skin. You can see the head. You can see where the eye was. There's other things like what might have been in his stomach at the time. Mm. So they said that probably when he died, he flipped over and then sunk to the bottom of the ocean at that time. And the minerals and everything from the bottom of the ocean went into this dinosaur and preserved it for, they're saying 110 million years old.
Wow.
Wow.
There you have it.
We'll throw that on the show notes. You can see dinosaur skin. Maybe I could get me some shoes made out of that. Dinosaur shoes.
They're saying at the tips of these spikes all over the body, it's like our fingertips. Nails.
Consistency
was over the top of all these kind of horn things coming off. It is amazing.
All right, I haven't seen it. I got to look at that.
All right. Those are fascinating articles, by the way.
Thank you.
Speaking of fascinating article.
Yeah, we've got some fascinating articles that we want to talk about for the show. You might remember a couple of months ago, I think, we were talking about, if you remember, the ecosexuality, where people were basically having sex with nature or having sex in nature.
I believe we titled that When a Man Loves a Tree.
Yeah, that's right. That's
probably one of my favorite.
Anyway.
That's probably one of my favorite titles that we've come up with.
there was another article, if you remember, that we didn't quite get to, and we actually get to go there today. Daily Mail in the UK released an article June of last year titled, Who Needs Mr. Right? Bride, 37, marries herself in a traditional ceremony to hit back at the stigma of being single. So there's a brief kind of summary of it. What I like about Daily Mail is that after their title, they actually give a bullet point summary.
Yeah, I noticed that. That's kind of nice.
This is what it says. Sophie Tanner, 37, married herself at a ceremony on Brighton. She did this at the Brighton Fringe Festival.
Oh, that's why when you see the pictures, there's all kinds of interesting characters.
Yeah. Like she actually requested for the city to recognize the wedding. They refused to do it. And so she did this sort of as a performance at this Fringe Festival. Single writer doesn't think she is a single and she is a writer. Single writer doesn't think you need a husband in order to marry. She wore a vintage gown, had 10 bridesmaids, and her dad gave her away. There is a show in the UK called This Morning, and Sophie Tanner told This Morning, the show, being single needs to be celebrated, not stigmatized.
Which I would agree with her. The thing, though, that I find fascinating is, in fact, she was in a relationship, she got dumped, and she's not very happy about it.
Right. She had a breakup. She was having a really hard time. And then she thought back to her 20s when things were, she was just happy, even though she was single. And she says she wanted to go back to that. So there is a lot of that motivation.
I'm more skeptical about her, what she's doing here, in the sense that she's a writer. She produced a book from this.
Did she produce a book from it?
Yes. She did this after one of her own characters marrying herself in her book.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And it was pretty done at this
Fringe Festival.
Fringe Festival. Yeah. Very open, you know, like people are going to see this.
Oh, come on, man. This is some great PR. In fact, totally. in the comments of the article, they kept saying, one of them was hashtag married myself, so attention seeking.
Yeah. All these tweets that were going about with her. I'm just a little more skeptical on this article. I mean, I'm okay with, you know, celebrate your singleness, sure, but this seemed a little bit more.
Yeah.
Oh, this is definitely some publicity, but it raises some interesting questions, though, of a culture that currently has lost sight of marriage and has embraced a narcissism that you see.
With all of that, too, I think in a lot of ways, we've lost sight of the purpose of marriage, right? Because in our traditional understanding, marriage was inextricably linked to procreation.
Yeah.
But these days, and I've mentioned this before, but especially with the introduction of no-fault divorce and things like that, I think that was symptomatic of our changing view on marriage, which now came down more to the sort of the sense of fulfillment between the spouses rather than the procreation and the raising of children.
We should probably explain what the no-fault divorce is. I think not enough people really fully understand this.
So before no-fault divorce, if you actually wanted to file for divorce, you couldn't do it for any reason or no reason whatsoever. You actually had to find some fault in your spouse, typically cheating or something like that, infidelity or other things would include physical abuse and things like that.
There needed to be a reason.
There needed to be a good reason in order to do that.
Now, it is interesting if you think about it that adultery technically isn't illegal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I find that people don't think about that. You know, you have a government that isn't legislating that you need to be or remain faithful legally. However, ethically, you know, it is interesting though that there's certain jobs that you're not going to get that job or you would lose your job depending upon how you acted in that regard.
Right.
But there isn't any legislation.
Oh, not in this part of the world. Anyway.
Right.
I mean, what you hear in the news these days is irreconcilable differences. Right? That's the terms that they use now.
But there doesn't have to be any reason at all. I just want to divorce them.
Yeah.
By the way, the reason I was bringing that up with divorce is not everything that is unethical is illegal. However, one of the things though that comes to my mind though is thinking about, well, what would lead to, you know, human flourishing? What is good for humanity? And so this, you know, no-fault divorce comes in and now you can...
Yeah, and the impact that it has, not just between the two spouses, but the children if they have any children.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before on the show, that it even has economical challenges in that, you know, now you have families separating and they need not just one house, they need two houses. Mm. And you kind of see that, how this will have ramifications in your society at large. Mm. And I think one of the things that I even hear in the church that concerns me is that there is this embrace to singleness that I think at times borders on unhealthy. Mm. Because I'll often hear from singles, and I know this might surprise some of our listeners to hear me, you know, say this, but you'll often hear from people that are singles in the church, you know, the church needs to respect, you know, singleness, and that I'm single and the Bible talks about that singleness is fine. And they're right. It is totally fine to be single. The Bible does say that, you know, it's okay to be single. However, the Bible also, though, begins with this idea that people were created not to be alone, that they were created to be in relationship with one another, and that part of being of humanity is to procreate, is to flourish, to subdue the earth, and to multiply, to have children, like you were saying, Steve. Not everyone can be single. Mm-hmm. Well, we could, but
we would quickly run out of
people.
Humans.
And in fact, that's exactly what's currently happening.
Right.
A lot of people don't realize this. I mean, you brought this to my attention the other day, Steve, that then a number of leaders in the UK right now,
right,
have no children.
Right. So I first saw it in this article that was written by this blog article written by Jonathan Van Meren for the LifeSite News. And he cites, I think, the Washington Examiner. It reads like this: German Chancellor Angela Merkel also has no children. British Prime Minister Theresa May has no children. Italian Prime Minister Paolo Gentiloni has no children. Holland's Mark Rutte has no children. Sweden's Stefan Löfven, I think is his name, has no biological children. Luxembourg's Xavier Bettel has no children. Scotland's First Minister Nicola Sturgeon has no children. Jean-Claude Juncker, President of the European Commission, has no children. And then it says, this is too remarkable to ignore.
Wow. And it just keeps going on. Yeah. Like, and we've seen this before. And I think that there's something to be said about that. I mean, a lot of people think that we have an issue with immigrants and, you know, immigrants wanting to come to our countries, or, you know, immigration into Europe or whatever it might be. But they fail to look at countries like Japan, and that Japan has an issue too with immigration. The fact that they have no immigration.
Right.
Like you have to have it one way or the other. You know, so you've got these countries that aren't having any children and they require immigration. And so they're immigrating. They have people immigrating so that they can at least keep their numbers, you know, at par, if not growing, so that their economy's growing. But then you have places like Japan that's chosen not to allow immigration. And they've been stagnant and regressing to the point that they can barely even pay the interest on their debt currently.
Yeah. And what's interesting thing too is that if you look at the statistics, a quarter of European women who were born in the 1970s are childless.
A quarter. I was telling Steve the other day, I said, Steve, listen, if Christianity ever wanted to win the culture war, it'd be so easy. You'd just have children.
Yeah. Like, in fact, that is the attitude of many Muslims. Islamic leaders are saying, well, you know, we don't need to have this theological fight, if you will, with Christians. All we need to do is just go to Europe.
We just need to outbreak
having
them.
Kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're seeing that, the effects of that in France.
Oh, without question. And it's scary to them because France has come to a place where within the next couple years here, I remember one day when we were talking about this years ago, Steve, and Terry, you know, we would say, oh, you know, 20 years from now, this is going to be an issue for France. Though that's now.
Yeah.
They're like a year or two away from the immigrants being the majority and being able to vote in whatever they want. And so you see in France just a desperate grab for power, this kind of like death throw for power as they're losing it.
I mean, just kind of bringing it back to our culture, I remember reading an article a couple of years ago. It was basically saying, they're saying it's not when I'm going to get married, it's if I'm going to get married. So within our culture,
that's a difference, isn't it?
There's a difference. And I mean, within our individualistic culture, they're concerned more about themselves and climbing that corporate ladder, so to speak. And I mean, all the names that you listed off there are high level officials that had to put a lot of focus into what they were doing, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, kids are just kind of like...
Getting married and having kids is low on the priority.
Right.
And I actually sympathize with women because even someone like Sophie, right? Like how many girls have had relationships break up on them because, you know, they've got some dude that's not interested in throwing down roots, having a family.
Yeah.
And so they would rather... split, and now you've got all these women that are dealing with singleness that don't necessarily want to be embracing singleness. And that's my concern, is I think as a church, singleness, I'm not trying to say that it's a sin or anything. I just think that sometimes we focus too much on singleness and we're not encouraging marriage and having children and human flourishing in that sense.
Okay, can I cut in here? Like, I want to go back to Christopher Yuan's talk.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know what he's talking about one of our speakers at the Apologetics Canada conference.
Right. He said there was too much focus on marriage as the highest ideal. And then he had a section of talking about singleness, of embracing that. It's kind of the opposite of this high ideal of marriage. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think his ultimate point was we don't put our faith in marriage or singleness, but we put it in our relationship with God. I think that was his ultimate point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which was... whether you're single or married, that's your focus, right?
And I completely agree, because I know of a number of young adults that are willing to compromise their relationship with God because A, they either don't want to be single or they don't want to be married, right? We can see it working both ways. I've seen young adults that are willing to compromise, you know, who their potential spouse would be because they can't find anyone and they're just willing to compromise instead of embracing singleness. Right? Compromise on who they're going to start dating and potentially marry. But then we can also see this when people are married and they're willing to compromise their marriage because they want to embrace singleness. I mean, you can see this going both ways. And so I agree with you. We need to keep our focus on the Lord. But there is this idea of the cultural mandate that God gave us in the garden to go have dominion, be fruitful, and multiply.
Assuming... our relationship with God as the foundation, right?
And
with that foundation in place, now let's look at married life, single life, and other lives.
What are the challenges?
Was that not in the Garden of Eden when sin was not there?
What do you mean?
Well, that would be pre-fall, right? I would say, I think that people were created to be in relationship with each other. I don't think people were created necessarily to be in marriage with one another. Like I wouldn't say that marriage is the ideal. I think to be in right relationship with God and right relationship with each other is the ideal, right? So in that sense, singleness should never be embraced, and the idea of some sort of completely self-focused narcissism. You should always be seeking to be in relationship with people. The kind of singleness then we're talking about here is whether or not it's married singleness or not. That's why I would say that it's not a sin to be single. But I also think it's something to be celebrated to bring forth life and to do that, because I still think that that's a good thing.
I think Terry has a good point, though, in saying that anything can be an idol. Right? It could be your marriage. It could be your family. It could be your singleness.
But here's my fear or concern for our culture, because this was my fear. I was terrified to get married. And the reason I was terrified to get married, were for multiple reasons. One was I didn't want to fail at marriage. Two, I was afraid that I was going to choose wrongly. Three, I was afraid that marriage was going to ruin my life. You know, it's going to cost me money and it's going to cost me time and it's going to cost me effort. And I don't get to necessarily do whatever I want anymore. I was afraid it's going to cost me all my freedom, right? And so, I mean, I was terrified to get married. In fact, I was
I called up a good friend of mine 2 weeks before the wedding and said, I'm calling it off, man. He's a friend from Montana. I said, I'm going to Montana. Can I come stay with you? And he's like, yeah, I guess so. You know,
surprise, Nancy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Her and I laugh about it now. But back then, I mean, it was like, I was
serious.
Yeah, seriously considering it. But notice how easy it would have been to just turn that into some sort of self-righteous, you know, it's good to be single kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm just embracing my singleness. Well, no, I wasn't. I was afraid to get married because I was narcissistic.
Right.
And I wasn't following the Lord.
Once you get married, that whole kind of selfishness gets
challenged.
Challenged. That's a good word. And then kids come along and it gets challenged even more. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a positive. You know, in a sense.
Oh yeah.
For all of us.
Marriage will humble you.
Yeah.
But it will also encourage you. Mm-hmm. You know, there's challenges and there's benefits.
Paul thought it was a benefit to be single.
Yeah, he did. And we in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 is worth a read. He discusses singleness from a couple different angles. I think for him he approached it from being a missionary. Singleness was good. He approached it also from, you know, just the challenges that the Corinth church was facing and with regards to singleness. But I feel that it's important that you're constantly putting singleness and juxtaposing it with marriage and that you're looking at both of those through, you know, a godly lens, a Christ-focused lens, instead of this self-focused, narcissistic lens.
In other words, it's not so much about the fact that you're single or that you're married, that's important. What's even more important is why, right? Why?
Perhaps that would be a better way of asking it.
Why do you want to get married and why do you intend to remain single? There are godly reasons for remaining single. Sometimes that's just how things work out and you need to embrace
Sometimes you're in a season where it's hard to find somebody.
Right.
That's okay.
Right. And other times it's because, well, maybe, you know, you're just not ready or whatever that means, right? But here's the thing that comes across my mind. Speaking of readiness, having a child was a frightening aspect for me because just like you, I was like, I don't want to screw up this child's life, right? What if I parent this child, human being, in the wrong way?
Or what if I screw up and I'm going to mess up their life?
Right. But this is something that I learned from a friend of mine who served in the military, and I think I told this story before. I asked him once, like, when did you know that you were ready to shoot someone? And what he told me was very interesting. I never forgot his answer. He said, you're never ready for that. It's one of those things, no matter how much you prepare for it, you cannot be ready for that first time that you shoot somebody. But what you do have to ask yourself is, am I willing? And I think that's that really
speaks
to... It's
a fairly morbid example, Steve.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I am juxtaposing.
On the one hand,
I'm trying to follow
life,
here.
And the other one giving forth life. All right.
Okay, continue.
But that was really helpful to me because that gave me a lot of courage later when I was...
Yeah, you're never ready to have
children.
A kid.
Yeah, but I had to ask myself, am I willing? I'm like, yeah, I think I am willing.
Do you know what's interesting to me? I've only rebuked a friend, you know, a handful of times in my life, but probably one of the harshest rebukes I've ever given a friend had to do with children. He told me, it was a very good friend of mine, and he was married, he was going off to school, and he decided that he was just going to be too busy and it was just going to be too expensive to have kids, and I just laid into him. And one of the things I laid into him on multiple things, but one of the things that I laid into him on was the benefits of having a children. One of the greatest joys of my life has been having kids. This is, by the way, something I found very fascinating. In each stage of my life, I have loved it. I have loved being single. I have loved being married. I have loved being a father. I have enjoyed each stage of life. I think that God is good and he knows what he's doing and he created us, and not in a way that it's going to be some horrible, awful experience, although you're going to have tough times being a parent, but that it's good.
It surpasses what we think. You know what I mean? Like it, it's better than we think.
Exactly. He has three kids now. And I would love to hear his rebuke to himself now. I can tell you this, it would have been a harsher rebuke than I rebuked him.
Yeah, right.
All right, I think that's a good place to wrap up. Let's move on to our final segment for today. Oh, we have a question that came in.
Do we have a question?
Yeah, the questioner this week asked, it's the perennial theological question, can we lose our salvation?
Can I lose my salvation question?
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on this, guys?
Let's take a moment to bat this one around. My answer to that question is no, I do not believe that you can lose your salvation. However, I believe that people can nuance their way out of this in many different ways. Mm-hmm. They can say, oh, if you started out as a Christian and then you abandon the faith and say you start pledging allegiance to Satanism or, you know, atheism or something, you know, people would just say, oh, well, they were just never a Christian to begin with.
Yeah.
And those are all interesting thought experiments. This is what I do know theologically. The Bible tells us that when we come to faith, that we have been washed, renewed, and made new through the blood of Christ, that we are a new creation, that the old is gone and that the new has come, and that God has cast our sins as far as the east is from the west. And so I have to ask myself the question, can that be undone? Mm-hmm. Once you are made a new creation and you are a child of God, can you be unmade a new creation? Can I no longer be a child of God? Can I now be dirtied? And so to me, as I study that, I think I don't think you can undo that. Mm-hmm. So people can still play though the question, well, did that ever happen in the first place?
And I think that's the really tough part for me is I myself am not a Calvinist, but I have a lot of Calvinist
friends. I don't think
friends.
Any of us are. No. Terry's shaking his head. No.
not here anyway, but yeah. We have lots of Calvinist friends. And one of the things that they bring up is just like you said, right? If there's a person who, you know, starts going all out worshiping Satan and stuff like that, well, this person was never saved to begin with, then my question is then how do you know, where is your assurance of salvation? Like, how do you know that you are saved, that you are not going to do what this person is doing?
Right. That becomes ultimately the challenge. And who knows, maybe this guy that's pledging allegiance to Satan, a couple years, he repents of that and he comes back. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I can't play that game and I can't pretend to know what's going on in people's hearts. God has made it clear that he judges the heart. We don't. But I'm still going to hold that you can be absolutely assured and that you cannot lose your salvation. I'll probably say just one last thing that I really like what Martin Luther, and this is the 500th year of the Reformation, so I think it would be good to talk about Christ alone. Luther said this. He said, the reason it's Christ alone, but one of his five solas, is because it's in no other name that God has guaranteed your salvation than Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And as Hebrews 7 says, Jesus is the guarantor of your salvation, that God has made a promise to you through Jesus and his body being broken for you. And this is what we celebrate in communion, is the reminder, like a wedding ring, is the reminder of God's promise to you and that he will fulfill that promise. Yeah. You can rest assured.
Yeah.
I'm just going to bring in one scripture. 1 Peter 1:18 and 19, for you know that it is not with perishable things such as silver or gold that you were redeemed from the empty way of life handed down to you from your forefathers, but with the precious blood of Christ, a lamb without blemish or defect. So I think the key word in there is redeemed, right?
That's right.
And that has to be revoked. That has to be revoked from the person that gave it to you.
That's right. And who's going to revoke that from God?
Yeah.
No one.
No one.
Can I throw the proverbial wrench
in
the gears?
How dare you, Steve?
Because I take a slightly different view on this. I think as with anything, like a yes or no question like this one, there are three answers, right? It's yes or no or depends, right? And I would make a good lawyer. I'm always like, depends, right? So yes, you do have this view of, you know, once saved, always saved. And people typically go to like Romans 8, 28 to verse 39. It's the golden chain and that sort of thing, right? And then there's John 10, 26 to 29, where it says, you know, like, whom the Father has given me, you know, nobody can, you know, pluck them out of my hands. And then in 1 John, you hear about, you know, these false teachers that have gone out from among us, but they were never really a part of us, because if they were part of us, they wouldn't have done that. But then there's also other passages like Philippians 2:12, where it says, you know, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, and a bunch of other passages like that. So, but here's the thing that comes through my mind, and I read an article that was written by Michael L. Brown, and I found it really helpful. One of the things that he points out is, it depends on what you mean by the word lose. Because typically when we say we lose something, we do it accidentally, right? Like we lose our phones, we lose, I lost my credit card once, and Terry had it. He took a picture of that with him. He said, I think I need lunch. And then he says, I'm going to hold this card hostage until all my demands are met.
Unbelievable, Terry. Actually, it is believable. So are you making then the distinction between lose and giving away?
Right. And so I would say that no, you can't lose salvation like you would lose your credit card. But I think if you were to spit in God's face and walk away from him, I think God would still respect the decision that you made.
By that, you mean choose to not have salvation. Right.
So insofar as you submit to God and you hang on to him, then yeah, he is faithful. He's not going to let you go. He's not going to let anybody, anything pluck you out of his hands. But if you're going to spin it and because otherwise, I have a hard time making sense of the warnings in the New Testament against apostasy. And so that's sort of my tension that I'm dealing with. So as to the question, can you lose your salvation? I would say no.
Have you seen the movie
but
Silence?
But you can abandon it.
Hmm? Did you watch the movie Silence with us?
Yes. Yes.
Because that raises though some interesting questions though with what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Is even in apostasy, right, you could still have your salvation, right, in the sense that you're not as strong as Jesus.
Right, because then then the question is, how do we define apostasy, what that looks like?
Right, forced apostasy versus right, willful apostasy.
Right, so those missionaries, if they had willfully abandoned, uncoerced, they abandoned it, then I would say, yes, they are apostates and they're no longer, they are prodigal sons. Yeah, that's where I would leave it. But
wrap it up there.
Yeah, obviously this is a huge question.
I just want to clarify that I found your credit card on the floor of the office.
That's right. That's right. Let's.
He dropped it. I just picked it up.
That's right.
I didn't take it out of his wallet.
But notice
that's what you're thinking.
Took a picture, so he's got the PIN number. I know your game.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us, listeners. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll come back next week with more stuff to think about.